Welcome to the ultimate crowdsourced personal finance show. This is your Friday Roundup.
You're listening to Choose FI Radio. The blueprint for financial independence lives here. If you're looking to unlock the secrets to financial independence and early retirement, you're in the right place. Stay tuned and join a community of like-minded people who are getting off the hamster wheel and taking control of their lives in the pursuit of financial independence. Choose FI, your home for financial independence online.
All right, super excited to be recording the Friday Roundup. And to help me with this, I have my exhausted but better quality voice over here, Brad Barrett. How you doing, buddy?
Yeah, this might be the first time I actually have a nicer voice of the two of us. It's shocking. But we just spent this amazing week at our annual FinCon conference. I think you may have spoken a million plus words, possibly.
And that's probably not too far off. You know, like when I was a kid and even growing up, I remember there were points in time where people would say to me, man, you got like a radio voice. You got a voice for radio. And I was like, oh, thanks. Don't know what to do with that. Now I feel like if someone talking in a vacuum say, dude, you got a voice for gravel, for sandpaper. I saw that on the wall. What grit is that?
You do sound better than you did yesterday, though.
So it's that's coming something. Back slowly. Recoli.
But yeah, all jokes aside, that was an amazing week, huh?
It was pretty cool, man. And I'd love to kind of do a play-by-play if you're watching our YouTube TV. We've got a few trophies on the wall back here, man. You know, so anytime you can win a trophy, pretty cool.
Yeah.
But it was an amazing event where I honestly feel like our community has embraced it at levels I never could have imagined. The meetings, the connection, the friendship that came out of that. It was just, I don't know, it was amazing.
Yeah, I mean, this has become a FI community event. And I mean, who could have ever predicted that? I know I've said this on the podcast previously, but when I went to my first FinCon, I guess 6 FinCons ago, ultimately, so 5 years ago, there were maybe a dozen of us who self-identified as FI community members. This year, there were easily 500. This has become a FI community event. I mean, really at the heart of it, this is a business-to-business conference.
I had never heard that language before.
No, like, me neither.
I'm not calling you out on it.
I recoil in using it.
No. It's fine. Like, you know, when we were talking to PT about it, and he was kind of saying, it is. It is to help you grow behind the scenes. So the growth that you're seeing is in spite of that,
right?
You know,
right.
It's not because of that. It's in spite of that because the FI community gets so excited about spending time together and having events that are just coordinated and there being a cadence to them. That's happening in spite of the actual original intent of the conference. And I would talk to people knowing exactly what you said, that this in many cases feels like it's intended to be a business to business event. I'd say, are you having a good time? And at the back of my mind, I'm kind of thinking, I'm worried that they're going to say no, because of course, if you're there, I want you to have an awesome time. And they are like, no, this is amazing. And they talk about the sessions. And because there are so many people that are going there for this content now, although again, you said, you know, business to business, there are sessions now dedicated towards topics related to pursuing financial independence. And aside from that, there are meetups consistently throughout that 3 or 4 day window where you always have something to do and you're in this great venue, you're in this great city. It's remarkable.
Yeah, I totally agree. I must have had 300 conversations with just members of our community. And it was amazing. Everywhere we looked, we saw Choose FI t-shirts. And now we have, in our local groups, we have t-shirts with not only the Choose FI logo, but the city name. So at this one event, I saw, and I'm probably going to leave people out, but I saw Phoenix, San Diego, Pittsburgh, Buffalo. I mean, I saw a Choose FI Buffalo shirt. Like, how cool is that? It's just, it is amazing how this community has spread. And each of these local groups, we had a meetup actually of local group admins, and there were easily 30 plus people there. And we had a wonderful lunch and played some like icebreaker games, get to know you type things. It was just a really, really good time. It's just amazing to see our community want to spend time together. That's what all of us have figured out here, is that this is not a solo journey on the path to FI. This is a communal thing. This is something where we gain energy and strength and just excitement by spending time with other people and getting to know people, asking questions, talking about your life, talking about what do you want your life to look like. This is not just the normal water cooler nonsense this is real stuff. And I think people crave that. And we see that, like you said, it's an even starker example when 500 to 1,000 FI community members show up at a business-to-business conference. There's no need for that. Other than that, it's become this amazing event. And like you said, there are all these meetups. It's just, it is so encouraging to me and just a really wonderful highlight of our year.
And one of the cool things, Brad, we actually brought Andrew and Zach with us this year. And Andrew and Zach, they are the heads of the Chooseify TV. They're the video department and they're doing the video podcast. So if you've subscribed to the Chooseify video podcast on YouTube, then you can watch the video version of the show with all the B-roll and the associated clips and everything that kind of is, it really just elevates this podcast experience. But aside from that, they got to run free in the halls at this FinCon conference, man. And so it's not just like, we'll be able to relive that to some varying degree and really sense what that was about. It was amazing to watch them just being able to engage with people one-on-one and kind of bring some of this energy back with us.
Yeah. Yeah, they were everywhere. I would look up and be having a conversation and all of a sudden we were being filmed. It was wild. And yeah, I mean, it's neat to know that they were just doing their own thing. That's what's cool about this is they've taken real ownership of our YouTube channel. And by the way, you can subscribe by just going to choosefi.tv. That'll just take you over to the YouTube channel and just hit subscribe. They definitely are spending a lot of time making these podcasts into these really interactive experiences that you can watch on video. So definitely head over there and subscribe.
The heart behind this was we're already creating the content twice a week. What would it look like to dial that up a notch? And they're helping us figure out what that looks like. But the obvious thing is once they've got this process in place, once they've been able to get their skill set to a certain point, they can go out, right? They can go out on their own and they can really start to capture the stories of people in our community, what they're doing. Perfect example, you were on a panel talking about financial independence and taking questions and answers. And you were on the panel with Mindy from Bigger Pockets, Bianca, who writes over at Miss Mazuma, Julian from Rich and Regular, and Michael from Uncommon Dream. It was a fantastic panel. There was standing room only, probably close to 200 plus people in the room that were there to watch and listen to your thoughts on this, on you know, what this looked like going forward. I say that to say you find out individual stories, and in particular, Bianca and Marla, who's actually already been on the show, they have invested in a Caboose community. So they, you know, talk about kind of making these unorthodox living decisions and living choices. There's this tiny home movement that's kind of been in the background. And a few people have really gotten excited about that and found a way to do it in a very creative way. Bianca, she specifically has invested her time and energy into creating this community of people that live on a train track that's no longer active and have these cabooses effectively tethered to each other. When I told Andrew and Zach that this was happening, that this was a thing, they are like 100% committed. And the community is in Wisconsin. We're gonna send them out there next year to capture a short form documentary on what this lifestyle practically looks like. And imagine how we can bring that story back into the community as well as many others.
Yeah, that is incredible. Yeah, it's neat to be able to have that option to do this. And yeah, I know Bianca and Marla are really committed to making this something, make it a FI community in this kind of weird way, right? It sounds bizarre when you hear a caboose, right? You're buying
awesome,
a caboose.
First of all, anybody?
But yeah, they have like these decks attached to them. And they basically say they're just nice hotel rooms in essence that they own. There's a community pool. There's a bike riding path. So it sounds like other members of the FI community are looking to buy up the remainder of these things when they go for sale. So, I mean, who knows? There could be some type of Airbnb or co-housing FI community on a lake in Wisconsin in Cabis, as Marla and Bianca call them.
I love it. And you know, there's no dogma that says that you need to go live in Cabis town, but you know, it might be cooler if you did.
Might be cool to visit at least.
Oh yeah, absolutely. But stories like these, let me give you another example of another thing that came on my radar. I was getting a chance to talk with Sarah, and Sarah listened to me quote unquote sandbagging you with a question. What would it look like if you could do this? So in this case, we're like, what's a challenge that you just assume is a fixed thing? And in this case, you had landed on the fact that you can't take vacations with your kids when your kids are in school. And we just reframed it. What would it look like to be able to do that? And on the fly, you kind of came up with a framework for building that out. The reason that that was so special for her is she started thinking about what's the thing that I can't overcome? And in her case, it's like she wants to spend more time with her kids. What does it look like to be able to spend more time with her kids? She's a dual income family and they're both, you know, they both work full time. She was like, what would it look like? She's like, well, I would need to cut down to part time or be able to work remotely. That would allow me to do that. And because they're on the path to financial independence, because they have a significant savings rate, because she's not afraid of the word no from her boss, it's not a terrifying proposition anymore because she has reclaimed that control. She talked to her husband and they decided, we want this. We want this at all costs. We want this. And if he says no, well, then we'll tell him we're going to have to go to part-time or we'll have to leave or whatever. You know, that variation, we want this and we're going to fight for this. She went to her boss, said exactly what I just laid out, and they accommodated. They gave her, they let her now do a significant portion of her work remotely. She's cutting down to effectively 6 hours a day in the office, I think, something like that. She's keeping the same pay. And what that means practically for her is she gets to have that time with her kids. Her kids no longer need to be in after-school care, after-school daycare, which effectively means she's getting a raise while getting the same pay, plus this expense is now gone, and she's been able to bring that, have that time with her kids, which is, for her, that's what she values.
Yeah, that is amazing. What a great story. And I think that's for all of us. Don't get sucked into these limiting beliefs or thinking that a situation is untenable or that this is the only option. You never know until you ask. We've said this repeatedly. Everything is negotiable. When you're a high performer at your company, when you add value, you never know what they're going to do to accommodate you. And I think Sarah here saw this as a perfect example. And I know I talked to her and her husband, John, about this, and they were just beaming. I mean, think about how this is going to improve their quality of life. She gets to spend this time with their kids. She now doesn't have to pay, like you said, for after-school care, which in a very high cost of living area where they are, that's a significant amount of money. So this is both a quality of life improvement and a raise. It doesn't seem that way to the employer, but to her, by any definition, this is a raise. So, I mean, that is amazing. And we get sucked into these stories that you tell yourself, and they're so pervasive. And they're so potentially negative. I actually had this with my daughter, Anna, last night. She had her first swimming practice of the year. And she has told herself a story that backstroke is not her thing or she's not good at backstroke. And I said to her, like, you have to stop that language right now. Because once you start telling yourself a story, your brain starts believing it. Even if it is patently false to anybody else. She is not bad at backstroke by any measurable definition. She's excellent at it, but she believes that she isn't. And she said it a couple times over a couple weeks now. And we have to stamp that out because once you start telling yourself that story, it's like these things that you keep with you. We all, every listener out there knows you have some story that you've kept with you on a much more important basis in all likelihood than I'm bad at backstroke. I'm bad at X or, oh, I'm not good in social situations. Like I think about the stories I told myself and that stuck with me for so long. And there was no basis in reality to essentially any of them, but they became true because I told myself them so often. So it's really important that we're aware of that and just try to stop. It's as simple as stop telling yourself that. It sounds silly, but our brains are so powerful. So I really wanted to highlight that.
And Brad, you know, the reason I wanted to highlight that and bring that up is the power of sharing your story and whether it's your story or my story or someone in our community adding a voicemail or an email, the power of that is the fact that other people are inspired by that. And the more that they see the pattern, that they see that other people are actually doing this. And when they make an unreasonable request, their world doesn't blow up. And in fact, the power that they have is truly there. Then they actually can do that. And then it just makes it more and more profound. And you start to, it just starts to work and your life gets better. And it can be a big thing. Like we just talked about a second ago, it can be a small, maybe even a silly thing. 2 weeks ago, I shared that story about the DMV and how it was not a good experience. And so I wanted to have a better experience. And I kind of laid it out what it would look like to have a wonderful experience at the DMV. I was at a lunch that the Motley Fool sponsored at FinCon. As I was coming away from that, there was somebody that stopped me in the hall and said, I just want to let you know that DMV thing saved hours of my life. My wife had just had a horrible experience and I was just set just to go do it because I needed to go get something updated as well. I heard that episode and said, wait, I could plan this. And I went through and I followed all the rules and I went and it was a ghost town and I was in and out. That's so simple, right? I know it's so simple, but like you can see when it's a pattern, right? look for what other people have figured out, and then just over time, take advantage that time is increasingly on your side.
And this is an overall life optimization strategy. It's just about living a slightly better life tomorrow and every tomorrow thereafter, right? No matter how you do it. And something like that, right? Like the DMV thing. Somebody listening to that could have said, oh, this is the most random story ever. Or somebody can listen to it and say, wow, the next time I need to go to the DMV or something like the DMV, right? You can apply it to many situations. I'm going to save potentially an hour or multiple hours of my life. And then every subsequent time I need to go to the DMV or someplace like the DMV, I'm going to save hours again. That's what's so cool about it. You take what you want from this or you just file it away. And we're just trying to do a rising tide lifts all boats scenario where Jonathan and I don't know everything by any means. This is a powerful community precisely because it is a community. We have people calling in all over the place with their little tips. And Elizabeth, who called in a couple of weeks ago, she's a perfect example.
Yeah. Now, Elizabeth had an incredible story. She called in her birthday and she shared with us all the actions that she had taken since finding the show. And you could see the aggregation. It was amazing. But Brad, you challenged her. I want you to keep us up to date as you move forward with this. I want you to share with us as you look back kind of these inflection points in your life. And she says, challenge accepted. I was talking to someone at our foundation dinner that we did, our foundation fundraiser. We partnered with Paula Pant to promote the Choosify International Foundation. You'll continue to hear us talk about this increasingly. But for this story that I want to share right now, I was talking to this individual and she says, I've been blown away by the content and I've been able to put a foundation in place that will allow me to be at financial independence and have the ability to walk away from my job within a few years, within 3 or 4 years. And I'm thinking about actually leaving early just because there's so many other things that I want to do. And I know I could always go back, you know, that sort of thing. And I was like, well, what if you did? What if you went to your boss and you asked him, you just told him, well, hey, I'm going to leave, you know, it's just great, you know, but it's next chapter. And he gave you a raise. And she's like, I don't know. I was like, what if he doubled your salary? What if they offered to double your salary? And she's like, she's taking it very seriously. She's really thinking about this. She says, I think I might have to, yeah, I might have to stay. I was like, no, wait a second. You didn't view that as unreasonable. You could actually see a future in which he would double your raise. And that tells me that you probably already know how much value you're adding to the company. Like, what are you, do you have access to like how much profit you've generated for your employer? She's like, yeah, I'm crushing it. Every second that you don't have that conversation, you're basically putting yourself in a box. You're worth twice what you're making now. You know it, and you're willing to just run it out for 3 to 4 years when you could go across the street and make twice what you're making now. If you internalize that, I saw the look on her face, and I know she knows she's worth twice what she's making right now. Fear keeps us from acting on that. Fear keeps us from going to our employer and saying, I know the value that I'm bringing to this organization, and I have options. If your employer knows that you're crushing it for them, knows what you're doing, there's no employer that doesn't make moves to hold on to you for dear life. That's just how this works. So there's two different types of people that are saying this. One is the type of person that says, that's me. Oh my goodness. That's me. Yes. What does it look like? If you double your income, the equation gets a lot more favorable. It's a lot more favorable. It's a lot easier to save 50% when you can have a conversation to double your salary tomorrow. What are you going to do with the difference? And the other person says, yeah, I'm not worth double. Okay. That's honest. That's realistic. What does it look like to be worth double? That's a different question. And that can guide your actions over the next year. Let's make choices and decisions. Let's find new information, new skills that make us indispensable. Because when we're indispensable, we have leverage.
Yeah. And Jonathan, you said in there, getting new information. So many of us had no background with anything financial. I don't know about you, Jonathan, but I certainly didn't learn any of this stuff in school. And even just living a better life, you have to basically be self-taught. I think what we're trying to do here is take the best of this community and put it together into something that's both comprehensive and comprehensible for people who have no background with this. So we mentioned this a couple of weeks ago, the Phi 101 beta program that we were putting together that both Stephen and Melissa just worked tirelessly on. And we actually had 650 people sign up for this beta course. So, I mean, that's more than most online courses get, period, right? These are people who stood up and said, I want to help. I want to take this beta. I want to help make it better. I want to give you my feedback. That's what we ask for. That's what we're craving. We have many, many hundreds of people open in this beta, and we're going to plan with all this help from the community. This thing's coming out of beta in November. We'd ask for you to send this to people. So if you're a listener at ChooseFI and you're brand new, first off, sign up for yourself. Just go to choosefi.com/FI101. Or if you've been listening for a while and you have people that you think this information can be valuable for, send them that link as well. They can sign up for the wait list. As soon as it goes live in November, we're going to send it out. choosefi.com/FI101.
And pairing very nicely with this FI 101 course that we've made, we are also adapting this for a military FI course as well. And that is not a huge stretch. Obviously, there's a lot in common, but there's some very important nuance and some real advantages for families that are doing this in a military setting, just different vehicles that they have access to and things that are very important to know about. You know, one thing that Ed said, and I'm not sure if he included it on the show, but he certainly said it to me privately. When you commit your best years, you know, to the military in service of our country or countries, the amazing thing is you have all the tools you need that when you finish your career there, you know, if you do your 20, you do your 50, whatever time you commit, you have all the tools you need to never have to work again. That's incredible. But that only works if you know the rules and you build a financial game plan to support that end goal. That will be the case. It's unfortunate. And this goes back to why he really had the heart to start this nonprofit. How many vets are sleeping in cars in really high cost of living areas because they haven't had access to this information? Help and support those where they are, but let's do an ounce of prevention for the next generation. That's what this is going to be. And I love the approach that Stephen and Melissa are taking with it. What is the core and what are the additional advantages for members that are in the military that they need to be aware of in order to fully optimize their path to financial independence? And the implications for their families are real as well.
Yeah, and Stephen is an active duty Air Force officer, and we actually have a whole team of military advisors helping to shape this. So, I mean, this is a real significant course that we're trying to put together for the military. And as soon as the FI 101 gets out of beta, we're going to launch this military course. So you can sign up for the waitlist now. If you have anybody you know who could get value from this, choosefi.com/military. So that's choosefi.com/military.
So one reason, you know, when they say it's a you said business to business conference earlier, what does that mean practically is we were able to have meetings with a lot of people and a lot of businesses that we've either talked about in the show or ones that we're fans of. And I think many people in our audience know that I've started using YNAB and that I like YNAB. But I think anytime you like a software or, you know, you need to talk about like things that they could do better. And I had kind of been building my list slowly, you know, because now I'm kind of getting into it. I'm finding what I like and what I don't like. And I got a chance to sit down with some people from YNAB and tell them. And so I think it's probably fair, since I've told the audience all the things I like, to go ahead and talk about a few things I think they could improve on.
Yeah.
What do you think? Okay. So I sat down, and this was actually with Ben. He's a community manager at YNAB. And I was like, Ben, and Holly was there. Holly's one of the ones that she's in our DC group. She's a super fan for YNAB. She's amazing. And she does some financial coaching in the DC area. And the way I look at YNABs is the most sophisticated digital envelope system that you could ever imagine. It's amazing for helping you organize your monthly cash flow. But that is honestly what it's intended for. It's to help you manage monthly cash flow. And so the way that YNAB currently structures their saving goals, it's really helping you save for small things like a computer or a boat or a vacation or whatever. And there's ways to manipulate it to allow you to save for something important like retirement, you know, or long-term savings goals, but it requires a little bit of fiddling to set that up. And there's some great tutorials. Actually, funny enough, one of the best tutorials for how to set up savings goals for yourself that the FI community could appreciate is actually done by Nick True over at Mapped Out Money. And YNAB, actually, their community refers a bunch of people to Nick True's videos, so that he does a great job at it. But you're actually categorizing savings as an expense, which might make sense, but it's a little bit like non-intuitive. I told him, I was like, in our community, yes, we're saving for computers and we're saving for vacations, but you know what we're saving for most of all is our financial independence goals, you know, reaching this number. And so I was like, for me to be like 1,000% your super fan here and just be like, oh my goodness, this does everything I want it to do. It needs to, one, make saving for your future self easier and more intuitive. And then two, the reporting back, like savings rate. Like I think all of us at some level, our perfect software probably includes something that easily wraps up our savings rate. And if we're going to lean into something like categorizing all of our expenses and taking the time to manage it, it'd be really nice if this software could then give us that back on the front end dashboard. And so, you know, I feel like a meeting like that in person moves the needle a lot more, you know, like it just does. You can kind of, and Holly leaning in, saying, yes, I've been talking about this. See, Ben, you need to do this. This needs to happen. And Ben was like, yeah, that's something that I think we're going to hop on. I'm going to go back and I'm gonna take this to the team. So it's like, it's cool when you're able to have that sort of like back and forth. And like, you're actually to talk to people that are in a position to actually take action and create something that's more useful for your audience. Like, I understand they have a software that's packaged as a service, right? And it has a monthly subscription. And so in order for this to be useful, not just to people that need help managing month-to-month cash flow, but also want to have goals for their long-term vision, their long-term future, like this is a wide open space. And I think as a result, potentially of that meeting, this is something that could actually be acted on and actually could be implemented. I can see it. I could see them working towards this. So that's an easy example. We were able to have three or four different conversations. Like, we have these partners that we work with very closely. And one thing is we become very tuned in to not just what they created for a mainstream audience, but what we want in our perfect world for our community, what we believe that like I want for myself and what we think the FI community wants in order for something to help them streamline their lives, earn more, spend less, enjoy the journey. Those are the partners that we get excited about, people that can help us with that. And at conferences like this, we get to sit down and have some level of influence on what decisions, what they invest resources into, that sort of thing. So I think there's so much that happened, but I think both of us look back and said that was a really good week.
Yeah, that was just an incredible week. Just loved every minute of it. Obviously, I think we need a little recovery period here. Maybe your voice. I had a headache the last night and usually feeling good, but feel ready to roll today and just fun to be back here recording. And actually, speaking of YNAB, so you guys are still using it. Have you noticed any additional change? You know, I'm constantly curious. I think every single time I ask you this, because again, I'm not a budgeter. I've never been. And I secretly kind of wonder, like, are there benefits for me? Like, there might be. I think the story that I tell myself is, oh, I don't need a budget. I wouldn't benefit from it. We wouldn't spend any less if we used a budgeting software. But I simply don't know if that's true or not.
Do you want to spend less? Like, what do you want?
No, I guess really not. So, yeah.
Yeah, I want, just generally, I feel like I need some guardrails to, like, spend less. So for me, that's kind of why I'd say, I don't think you need one. I don't think you need to use it. Yeah. The other thing is, for me, my wife, Dani, wants to have more insight into like our day-to-day purchasing decisions so she can look for patterns and nip them in the bud when they're kind of going into drift state. So I think it's probably going to be an important part of her life going forward. I don't think you need it.
Okay.
Yeah. That's my gut. You already got your finances down to like five. You use this multiple times and it's accurate. You spend about 5 to 10 minutes a month managing your finances now, and you're kind of on autopilot. I don't think it's for everybody, but, you know, I heard someone else say this term. They use the word dumpster fires. Like, how do you engage with your personal finances? Well, to be honest with you, I don't check it because it's a dumpster fire. Yeah. Like, if that's you, this would probably be worth every penny that you pay for it just to help you get some control over that. And even when you're past the point, if you just like to have some guardrails in place, I think it's useful, but it's not going to be for not every single person in the universe. Like, why everyone needs a budget and why you don't, right? Like, something like that. It's something like that. I think if you're listening to this, the difference is, without guardrails, would you spend everything you make? If you don't direct your money towards if you don't autopilot your investments, will you spend everything you're made? And there's a couple of different ways to approach it. One is the YNAB, which is you direct your goals. But the other option would be like the anti-budget. And yours is this third thing. But the anti-budget is something I heard Paula talk about. And it basically is, you basically set yourself up for success. Like, you fund everything you need to fund first, and then you can just spend the rest, right? And that's very simple as well.
And yeah, just to interrupt, amongst that funding, quote unquote, that's your savings, I'm assuming?
Yeah, basically you would just start with, all right, what do I need to happen to make sure that I'm happy with the outcome? Do all that, and then you spend the rest. And I think the anti-budget doesn't work at the beginning. You can't start when you're quote unquote a dumpster fire. I don't think you should start with the anti-budget. I think you should start with something like YNAB. But when you have enough margin and it's just a matter of like your passive self won't take action on that margin, you just won't invest your money, that anti-budget mindset will kind of say, all right, these are the five things I need to do each month. I need to make sure that I'm throwing my money at my 401k. I need to throw something in my savings account. These different buckets that you may have, I need to pay down my student loan debt, whatever. And then whatever's left you can spend. And I feel that works better after you have more margin in your life. I think when you're either paycheck to paycheck or you have a negative savings rate, you need a budget. And so it's kind of like parsing out. There's you, your life's on autopilot. You may do that without using that verbiage, but practically speaking, you have 100% savings rate until you make the choice to spend a penny. And then kind of one step below, that's the anti-budget. It's just kind of this passive approach where you say, I'm just going to throw everything at my goals. And then after that, I'll spend what's ever left over. And then the next step below that would be, you know, kind of me, which is like guardrails, you know, which is just kind of maintenance and making sure I'm not letting anything go too far in any particular direction. And then the next below that would be like dumpster fire. And you need to just clean up your life and you don't know why it's so bad, but you just need to get a better picture of what's going on. All right, guys, I think we just figured out our title for this episode. It's going to be guardrails and dumpster fires. All right, well, let's go ahead and switch gears here and bring in some feedback from the community. What do you got for us, Brad?
Yeah, Jonathan, we got a great question here from Danielle, who's asking for advice on how to optimize her accounts.
Danielle says, I'm brand new to the idea of FIRE. I have some decent assets, but after reading Quit Like a Millionaire, that's Bryce and Christie's book, we interviewed them several weeks ago, I realized my money is definitely not working for me the way that it could. I'm 48, and maybe I don't have to wait until I'm 65 to retire. Although I still plan to work, it would be nice not to have to hustle like I do now. I think I'm just a few years away and I'm open to suggestions of how things should be shuffled to expedite my financial independence. How would you maximize the following? For assets, I have $109,000 in cash, $606,000 in a traditional IRA. It was managed and has recently been rebalanced to, quote unquote, brace for a likely recession in the next 12 months, end quote.
Sounds like someone told her that.
Yeah, I feel that too. The breakdown is 28% stocks, 51% ETFs, 18% mutual funds, and cash is about 2%. There's $7,000 in a SEP IRA. There's $355,000 in a primary residence. So that's purchased 3 months ago. So no mortgage, $130,000 in a rental property, no mortgage here. It's being leased out currently for $1,300 a month. She plans on selling it in a year when the lease is up. And there's $23,000 on the vehicle, no loan. This is really incredible.
Yeah, really.
So no debt, no future Social Security or pension. I'll be able to invest an additional $100,000 of cash over the next 2 years. And her target for financial independence is $1.5 million. So first of all, let's just say, wow. Yeah,
congratulations. I mean, that's an enviable financial position for sure. She's 48 years old. It looks like what she is about at least over $1 million, $1.2 million, and no debt whatsoever. That's a pretty darn good start.
I would say she's braced, man.
Yeah, I think she's braced. So, yeah, we actually reached out to Danny Kenny, who's a CFP, and he's one of our in-house experts here. And he sent us a voicemail here in response. So, Jonathan, let's cue it up.
Hi, guys. This is Danny Kenny from Financial Planner, calling in regarding a case study sent in by a listener. So, hope to run through Danielle's situation. Danielle is 48. She's working really hard and doesn't really want to wait until she's 65 to retire. She still plans to work, but maybe not as hard as she currently is, not grinding as much. So in her portfolio, she has $100,000 in cash, about $600,000 in traditional IRAs, and a small SEP IRA that she just recently opened. All told, she has about $725,000 in investment accounts. She also owns two pieces of real estate, a home with no debt on it, no mortgage, and a rental property worth about $130,000, also with no debt. This rental is currently being rented out for $1,300 per month. She has no other debt. She also said that she has no Social Security or pension income. This is a big question mark because current projections show that Social Security will the administration will need to cut benefits in the future, but want to make sure that she's actually not receiving Social Security. The Social Security Administration has said by 2034, they would need to cut benefits by 25 to 30%. So benefits that are being paid out are tied to income that's coming in through payroll taxes. So if that's the case, then we don't necessarily want to plan for zero Social Security income, maybe just a reduced number. And finally, Danielle says her target for her FI number is $1.5 million, and she plans to save $100,000 over the next 2 years. So I'm making a big assumption here with her case that the goal of $1.5 million is based on wanting to spend $60,000 a year in retirement. I'm using the 4% rule to get to that number. So instead of targeting $1.5 million, maybe we can target that $60,000 a year of income to reach that. And regardless of where the money comes from, we might not need $1.5 million to get there. So if we back up to her current investment accounts, the $725,000 would be able to provide about $29,000 per year using the 4% withdrawal rate. And looking at the rental, that $1,300 a month, which equates to the 1% rule there, which is a great yardstick for measuring rental properties. So this is looks like it could be a good rental property. That is producing just over $15,000 a year. So between that investment, those investment balances and the rental property, Danielle's balance sheet could provide roughly $45,000 a year of income. So that's not quite getting us to $60,000. So let's look at our opportunities for going forward. If we take another leap and say that Danielle is able to either change her work hours and work less in the current job, or maybe pursue a different type of job that she enjoys more, maybe she can keep working for another 7 years and say work till age 55. If over that time frame she doesn't save any more into her accounts beyond that $100,000 that she mentioned earlier, she and just lets the investment accounts grow over that time period, this could be a way to meet her goals. So say we have a 6% rate of return for 7 years, that investment account would grow to roughly $1.25 million. So $1.25 million, and that would produce just under $50,000 at the 4% withdrawal rate. Additionally, if she kept the rental property and increased her rental income with inflation, she would have gross income of roughly $68,000 at age 55. So a portion of that is the 4% withdrawal from the portfolio, but the balance is coming from the rental property, roughly $19,000 after inflation. This is valuing that rental property at between $400,000 and $475,000 based on the income that it provides. So with all of those different holdings that she has, she could meet her goals in the next 7 years or so, even without saving anything further from future income beyond that $100,000 that she said she would have to be able to save. So things to focus on right now, some recommendations. I would focus firstly on her asset allocation inside those investment accounts. So make sure you're comfortable with your investment mix so that you'll be able to stick with it should the market take a downturn or a correction. So the investment strategy is only good if you're able to stick with it. So getting to the correct allocation is number one priority there. Secondly, I would consider hiring a property management company for the rental property. So she mentioned that she was considering selling the property, but the value that this income provides to your retirement is huge. So I would consider any other way so that you could keep this property producing the income for you. So if you go the route of hiring a property management company, I would budget about 10% of the rental income to pay that manager, and they'll be able to handle everything for you, taking the calls at 2 a.m. or whatever the issues are, evicting tenants if needed. They can handle all of that for you. Alongside that, I would bank all of the rental income until you need it. So bank that $1,300 per month and just put it in an account so it's there to provide for any repairs or any emergencies with the property. The goal here is to get this out of your mind. Their money will be there for any repairs. The property management company will handle the repairs. It's just something that's on the side that's ready to produce income to sustain your retirement down the line. And finally, I would focus right now on trying to change your life for the better today. So maybe that means cutting back on those work hours to make life more livable or fulfilling, or maybe you find a job that's more tied to your values and you're able to work there for another 7 or so years. Like I said before, beyond that expected savings of $100,000, you don't need to save any further into these accounts to meet your goals. So maybe you can target the level of income that you need to sustain your life now, and maybe that's a more fulfilling job to get you there. So I hope that's really helpful. Some different ideas on approaching the FI number. It's more about your income or the income that it would produce than a flat dollar amount to reach. So like I said, I hope that's helpful. And this is Danny Kenny from Financial Planner. And I hope you guys have a great day. Thank you.
Danny, that was amazing. Thank you for sharing your insight on that and for kind of working with us as we get these types of questions. I mean, your technical expertise is incredibly valued. And Brad, I think we need to do a better job just because we've had people emailing us, asking us, how do I get in touch with Danny? How do I get in touch with Sean Mullaney? We actually spent a few weeks ago talking about fees, and we were really laying into the assets under management model in that case, especially those exorbitantly high ones. We kind of talked for a little bit about what we don't like. And that's the nature of all of us. We always complain about what we don't like, but we have to talk about what we like at the same point. And we love people inside our community. They're trusted resources that just give and they give and they give, and they have a teacher's heart. And yes, they've created a business around this idea, but that's a good thing. It's a good thing for us. It's a good thing for you as a listener to this information, that if you need advice, you need someone that can tailor this information, that there's someone that you can reach out to and has a business model that can support this. So Brad, what's the best way for someone to get in touch?
Yeah. And you actually mentioned two people there. So Sean Mullaney is at the fitaxguy.com and Danny Kenny is at fi-nancialplanner.com.
So oh, I see what he did there.
Yeah. It's cute, right? So picture financialplanner.com, but there's a dash after the FI. So yeah, you can reach out to both those guys. And I just wanted to dial in on one thing that Danny said in there, which I think is really, really important. So he actually took Danielle's rental property and kind of almost worked backwards into what it would be worth in the normal, if you will, 4% rule. So actually what he did was he took the gross rent. So he took the $1,300 and basically multiplied that by 12 months and then multiplied that by 25 to get what that would normally be worth in your net worth in, let's say, index funds or some such, where you could comfortably pull out 4%. Now, one thing that I did want to clarify is that clearly there are expenses on rental properties. So in this case, Danielle was getting basically the 1% rule, which is this is a $130,000 property. She was getting $1,300 per month. So that fits Paula Pant and Chad Carson and Bigger Pockets, all their 1% rule. Then they have a further rule, which obviously there are expenses on these properties. They generally say it's going to be about, and this is roughly 50% of your gross rent. So 50% in this case of the $1,300 would be $650. You're actually at $650 net income from this. So what I did was I took that $650 and assume that was Danielle's net income, what she pockets after all expenses, multiplied that by 12 months to get her yearly net income, and then multiplied that by 25. So in this case, that came out to $195,000, which that would be the normal 4% rule, okay? But this property is actually only $130,000. And as Jonathan mentioned in the intro to this, she does not have a mortgage. So that $130,000, if that was in index funds, she would only be able to pull out 4% of that. But in this case, this real estate property is actually operating as if it were $195,000. It's more powerful in her case. So ultimately, how Danny looked at this entire problem, and this is a puzzle, right? All of our financial lives are puzzles, and it's based on our own personal information. He said he believes she needs to replace $60,000 in expenses. And you work with the pieces you have. You work with Social Security. So even though Danielle said there's no Social Security, unless there's some extenuating circumstances, most American workers are going to have some level of Social Security. So that fits in. There are people who have pensions. That fits in into that total puzzle of, I need to replace this amount that I spend every year. And then you work with, what are the investments I need to get there? Do I have rental properties? All these things fits in to this master puzzle. And it's cool to take a step back and look at someone else's situation and say, okay, how can I take that information that Danny just gave to Danielle and work it into my own life? So I think it's really broadly applicable for the entire audience.
If you're hearing this episode and you want to shoot a message to Danny and you want to contact him, we're going to actually have a form at the bottom of the show notes for today's page. So you can shoot them over a contact request. All right. Well, MK is not taking a vacation this week, so I'm going to be doing the shout outs myself. The first shout out I want to give, Brad, is to Katie. She says, when you're only $22,000 away from paying off your house and your family can't understand why you chose to replace the $100 radiator on your 2001 Toyota Camry with 300,000 miles rather than just buy a different car. Hashtag choose Fi. And MK added me with an extra hashtag, because Fi.
Oh, I love that. It's the little choices, right? To us, it seems obvious to spend the $100. I mean, what's $100 to keep this car going? That thing could last forever, right? But everyone else's reflexive choices, oh, just buy another car. You've had that for 18 years. It has 300,000 miles on it, you know, yada, yada, yada.
Katie's going to appreciate this. She's going to appreciate this. So my brother, Andrew, who's he's helping in the video department now, his car broke down last week. I mean, broke down. It's not coming back. No coming this coming. But I thought maybe you were like looking for a way out on Golden Boy. I thought maybe, you know, I was like, you know what, man, maybe you just pass this down, let the next generation take it. It's still got some miles in it. You go get that, whatever, that electric car. You had your chance, man. You had your easy out. I asked you, why don't you just sell this thing to Andrew for, you know, and you said, I think I just want to hold on to it.
Yeah.
You had your chance and you said Golden Boy for life.
Yeah. Golden Boy for life. What a great hashtag. I think Laura should close her ears on this one because she would have probably preferred that I did sell it to Andrew. But I think Golden Boy can last forever as far as I'm concerned. It only has, do you believe it only has 126,000 miles on it?
It's amazing.
A 2003 Civic.
That's amazing, dude. Yeah, it's really incredible. And you got yourself a great mechanic now, I think, that you're working with.
Yeah, it was great. You know, it's reach out to the community, right? The mechanic that I had been using, I increasingly was getting that sense that I was both A, getting ripped off, and B, getting subpar service. Just a couple little things.
One, okay, but both?
Right, both. Yeah, not ideal. So I reached out to our friend Will Boland from Car Lots, who we've had on a previous episode. And I said, hey, Will, I'm at the point where I think Golden Boy might be in trouble, but I just don't want to give up on it. And I'm like, who do you use? Who do you trust as a mechanic? And yeah, he sent me to someone he really, really trusts. I brought the car in. They were able to fix this slight issue that has been really concerning me for a while. And yeah, I'm feeling really, really positive about Golden Boy. So it comes back to your network. It comes back to having people that can help you, that you trust, that you can rely on. I sent Will that message, and he was able to connect me with this guy at the shop, and I had my car in the very next day. I mean, how cool is that?
I mean, I know our local community is going to send us emails. Let me just nip that in the bud. I'll have Brad put a link, if the guy has a website, on the show notes for today's page, and you can just ask him in the Facebook group. He can put a post there. Well, you know, you don't need to send us an email about it, but I don't think the entire world wants to know either. All right. We got another mailbag here from Anne. She saved $2,500 this year by using the library. Some of these libraries, I mean, they get it, man. They understand what we really want to know. And that is when they post the value of the books that you've checked out, you know, in aggregate over the year. I don't think ours does that. A little piece of me dies when it doesn't show up on the receipt. But to be able to show, hey, you've checked out 200 books this year, aggregate value, $3,000, you get that on the receipt. Guys, we got to put that picture on the YouTube video for this episode. It's pretty cool.
Oh, yeah, it's amazing. This is actually really great. It says, you just saved $17 by using your library. You have saved $2,532 this past year and $7,349 since you began using the library, followed by an exclamation point. And she said, this is so fi. I love that. It is. I mean, as we've talked about many times, choose fi, friends of the library. I take out virtually all of my books from the library, and it has to be literally tens of thousands of dollars of money that we've saved just in the years that we've lived here in Richmond. I cannot fathom how much it is, but man, would I love to get a little ticket like that.
Well, you know, we do have the same library now, and I'm curious, have you put in a request to get our book at our library at this point?
Oh, no. MK is going to be very mad at me, but I have not as of yet. Have you?
Well, I'm you're the guy. This is you, man. This is you. You're on the PTA board. You're invested hardcore into this. Get our book. Get our library to get our book.
Laura's on the PTA board, and Laura will do this because she's excellent with the library.
Thanks, Laura. All right, local group updates. What do you got for us?
All right, Jonathan. So on September 14th here, San Diego local group has a special guest presenter. It's actually Sean Mullaney, the FI tax guy who we mentioned a couple of minutes ago. Topics will be tax planning, recessions, and risk mitigation, and the impact of caring for other family members on your path to FI.
That's amazing. I'm trying to spread this out, but we are going to be doing the Speakers Bureau. And if you guys hang out with us in a few more weeks, I'll give you more information on that. But if you're hearing that talk and you're like, what would it look like to have a version of that talk in my local area? We're spinning up some ideas in the background here. So we'll circle back on that one.
Yeah. And Jonathan, just in the last 2 weeks, we have, it looks like, about 10 new Choosify local groups. And as always, you can find them at choosify.com/local. But yeah, we have College Station, Texas, Sioux Falls, South Dakota, and Sioux City, Iowa, Greenville, North Carolina, Westchester County, New York, Northwest Florida Panhandle, Oslo, Norway, Brazil, Manchester in the UK, and we have a new cohort group called House Hacking. So that one's especially exciting.
You know, I tell you what, if you can pull off a house hack, if you can do that, and I'm tailoring this to 20-year-olds, you know, 30-year-olds, 40-year-olds, 50-year-olds, anyone can do this, but just, man, if you can do this when everybody else is just going and getting roommates, you pull off a house hack, right? Those college years, 5x30, baby. It is like, it is such a force multiplier. It's something we're going to come back to. We're going to probably talk about it every like 20 or 30 episodes. It is one of these things that if you build a structure for your life, you make the slightly more difficult choice, because not only do you have to get roommates, you have to go find the property. You have to figure out the financing. There's elements you have to figure out. If you can do it, solve this one problem, and financial independence in your early 30s is nearly a certainty. It's a mathematical certainty. That's how powerful this actually is. And we'll have examples that we'll be continuing to highlight because it's so powerful. If we look at past guests, in particular, Chad Carson, episode 16 of the podcast, Scott Trench, episode 63 of the podcast. I think there's a couple more that are spread throughout where people relied on that. If you pull this off, Sonny Burns, most recently did this as well. Brad, you can look up that episode number. And then we have another one that we're going to be coming back to and highlighting in a few weeks. You pull this off, it's a mathematical certainty. It's that powerful.
Yeah, and Sonny was episode 139.
So this is one of those things that if you realize how powerful this is, you either have one, you want to share what you did, or you want one and you want insight and information on how to go about doing it, this will be a useful group for you and hopefully just kind of help. It's all about learning to ask better questions. And sometimes you just don't know what questions to ask. So this house hacking group is one that's really going to speed up the learning curve there. All right. Well, unfortunately, that is going to bring this episode to a close. And as I close, I wanted to talk about how with our book coming out this October, we're restructuring our drawing that we do every Friday. So now when you enter the drawing, you're being eligible to win a copy of our new book, Choosify, Your Blueprint to Financial Independence. But to keep it fresh, just in case you already have that, right? You already have the book. That's how you found out about us. We're gonna mix it up a little bit. We have a book club with, I believe, almost 5,000 people in it. And it's run every month. And honestly, the reason that it's so vibrant is because of the tireless efforts of Hugo, David, and Alex. Basically, it's just there's these books that we all get excited about. What would it look like to foster a specific discussion on the insights that are presented in the book? And right now, I believe they're reading Man's Search for Meaning and Atomic Habits, which you've heard us reference on the show. And we're actually going to be interviewing James Clear in a few weeks here about that book. So what we decided to do is we'll always have our book as one option for you if you haven't had that yet, or if it's one you want to win to be able to share, read yourself or share with a friend. But two, to keep it fresh, we will also offer up whatever the book club is either reading or discussing as an alternate book as well. And that's kind of a model that we feel comfortable with and we'll use going forward. So the way it works, if you want to enter the drawing, all you need to do, just go to choosify.com/iTunes, follow the instructions there, leave us a short written review, and then send us an email to feedback@choosify.com, letting us know that you left a review and what screen name you left it under. We give away one book for every 5 written reviews that we get, and we announce the winner on the Friday roundup. So Brad, with that, how many winners do we have today?
All right, Jonathan, we have one winner today, and the winner is Gary. And Gary called Choosify a great show. I just discovered this podcast and the FI community. Their talks really resonate with me and should be something all college an early career individual should listen to as a basis for starting life. I'm starting the journey.
All right, my friends, the fire is spreading. We'll see you next time as we continue to go down the road less traveled.
You've been listening to Choose FI Radio Podcast, where we help middle-class America build wealth one life hack at a time.